NFB Cardtronics Settlement. From the editor, we have been asked to publish the following material in accordance with a court order in this case. This information should be useful to our readers. Here it is. Notice, United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts. Commonwealth of Massachusetts, et al., Plaintiffs, versus Cardtronics Incorporated, et al., Defendants. Civil Action Number 03-11206-MEL. Notice of Proposed Remediation Plan Concerning Final Order Relating to Class Action Settlement, Agreement and Hearing to be Held on September 15, 2010 at 2:30 p.m. To all members of the nationwide class certified by this court to include blind patrons of automated teller machines, ATMs, owned or operated by either Cardtronics Incorporated or Cardtronics USA Incorporated, collectively Cardtronics. On December 4, 2007, this court granted final approval of a class action settlement agreement entered into between plaintiffs, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the National Federation of the Blind, NFB, and several individual blind persons, and defendants, Cardtronics Incorporated and Cardtronics LP, now Cardtronics USA Incorporated, collectively Cardtronics, concerning, among other things, the accessibility of ATMs owned or operated by Cardtronics to blind patrons under the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, and Massachusetts state laws. Due to Cardtronics' inability to meet a number of important requirements of this court's final order of December 4, 2007, the parties have reached agreement on a proposed remediation plan, subject to approval by this court, that requires Cardtronics to meet all of their prior obligations with extensions of time to do so, plus additional obligations intended to ensure that the members of the class enjoy the benefits set forth in the original settlement agreement and final court order. Cardtronics has agreed to a remediation plan that includes, among other actions, ensuring that, with the exception of Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores, all ATMs owned by Cardtronics will offer voice guidance through a standard headphone jack located on the face of the ATM by no later than December 31, 2010. Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores will offer voice guidance through a standard headphone jack located on the face of the ATM by no later than March 31, 2011, and that by March 31, 2011, at least 90% of all transactions at covered ATMs shall occur on ATMs that are voice-guided or otherwise accessible to blind people. Cardtronics has agreed to develop improved voice-guided scripts for all Cardtronics-owned ATMs to ensure that blind customers can easily access all ATM functions. Cardtronics has also agreed to institute an inspection program intended to ensure that voice-guided ATMs remain operational for blind customers. A full copy of the proposed remediation plan is available on the NFB's website, www.nfb.org, and on the Cardtronics website, www.cardtronics.net/news/NFB_remediationplan.asp. The locations of the existing ATMs covered by the final order and by the proposed mediation plan with designation of voice guidance status can be obtained through Cardtronics ATM locator feature available at www.cardtronics.net/about/ATM locator.asp. As part of the proposed remediation plan and subject to court approval, Cardtronics has agreed to pay the amount of $145,000 in attorney's fees to the attorneys representing the class. These amounts will not detract from Cardtronics' duties to provide accessible ATMs to the class. The court will conduct a hearing on the motion of class counsel for their attorney's fees at the date and time set forth in the following paragraph. Cardtronics has also agreed to pay an additional $60,000 to the NFB for testing that the NFB will conduct to ensure compliance with the remediation plan requirements. You are hereby notified, pursuant to Rule 23 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and an order of the court dated May 18, 2010, and as thereafter amended, that a final approval hearing will be held on September 15, 2010 at 2:30 p.m. before the court in the United States Courthouse, 1 Courthouse Way, Boston, Massachusetts, 02210. The purpose of this final approval hearing is to determine whether the proposed remediation plan should be approved by the court as fair, reasonable, and adequate, and whether the application for award of attorney's fees and reimbursement for expenses should be approved. Class members who wish to object to the proposed settlement must provide notice of and explanation of their objection in writing to the court at the address above, with copies to counsel at the addresses provided below, no later than Monday, August 30, 2010. Only class members filing timely objections may request to present their objections at the final approval hearing. Office of the Massachusetts Attorney General, attention, Mara Healy, Esquire, 100 Cambridge Street, 11th floor, Boston, Massachusetts, 02108. Brown, Goldstein & Levy, LLP. Attention, Sharon Crever Weisbaum, Esquire, 120 East Baltimore Street, Suite 1700, Baltimore, Maryland, 21202. Joseph Kosiubes, Kosiubes, Esquire, Bingham McCutcheon, LLP, 150 Federal Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02110-1726. For further information, visit www.cardtronics.net/news or contact Counsel for the Plaintiffs, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Office of Attorney General, Disability Rights Project, 617-727-2200, www.mass.gov/AGO, or Brown, Goldstein & Levy, LLP, 410-962-1030, www.browngold.com. Except as instructed in the notice, please do not contact the court. Dated May 18, 2010, by order of the United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts. United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts. Proposed Remediation Plan. The proposed remediation plan provides as follows. 1. All Cardtronics-owned ATMs in Massachusetts will be voice-guided no later than June 30, 2010. 2. By December 31, 2010, at least 90% of all transactions at covered ATMs occurring within the borders of Massachusetts will occur on ATMs that are voice-guided. 3. All Cardtronics-owned ATMs nationally will be voice-guided no later than December 31, 2010, with the exception of Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores, which will be voice-guided no later than March 31, 2011. 4. By March 31, 2011, at least 90% of all transactions at covered ATMs nationally will occur on ATMs that are voice-guided. 5. With the assistance of the NFB, Cardtronics has developed enhanced scripts for the great majority of the ATMs it owns, with the exception of Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores on or before December 31, 2010. Cardtronics will install enhanced scripts on all Cardtronics-owned ATMs, except where it is not technologically feasible to do so, in which cases, on or before December 31, 2010, Cardtronics shall either 1. Replace such ATMs with ATMs on which an enhanced script can and will be installed, or 2. Remove such ATMs from the Cardtronics-owned fleet. Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores will be voice-guided no later than March 31, 2011. Any script on any Cardtronics-owned ATM, including the enhanced scripts, shall meet the requirements set forth in the definition of voice-guided and voice-guidance set forth in the final order, footnote 2, and as supplemented in paragraph 6 of this order. 6. With the exception of Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores, by December 31, 2010, all Cardtronics-owned voice-guided ATMs and those merchant-owned voice-guided ATMs that Cardtronics designates as making up a portion of the 90% transaction requirements of paragraphs 2 and 4 above will have tactily discernible controls, that is, operating mechanisms used in conjunction with speech output that can be located and operated by feel. When a numeric keypad is part of the tactily discernible controls, all function keys will be mapped to the numeric keypad and, except for those remaining WinCore ATMs installed in Target stores prior to June 2007, the numeric keypad will have an echo effect such that the user's numeric entries, other than the entry of a personal identification number, are repeated in voice form. All tactily discernible controls will otherwise comply with applicable regulations. All Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores will meet these requirements no later than March 31, 2011. 7. With the exception of Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores, by December 31, 2010, all Cardtronics-owned ATMs will have appropriate signage as identified in the final order, Example 1, Footnote 3. All Cardtronics-owned ATMs located in 7-Eleven stores will meet these requirements no later than March 31, 2011. By December 31, 2010, Cardtronics will send such signage to each of its merchant-owned customers that operate a voice-guided ATM, with the exception of those customers for whom Cardtronics physically placed Braille signage on each of the customers' voice-guided ATMs after April 9, 2007, requesting that those customers install such signage on their voice-guided ATMs. Cardtronics will include a letter from the NFB describing the importance of such signage with its request. On or before February 1, 2011, Cardtronics will provide the NFB with the approximate date on which it placed signage on each of the merchant-owned voice-guided ATMs or sent the appropriate signage by mail. 8. By December 31, 2012, Cardtronics will cause to have inspected all Cardtronics-owned non-branded ATMs to ensure that the voice-guided features of these ATMs are in working condition. Approximately 10,000 of these inspections shall take place in calendar years 2010 and 2011, with the balance taking place in calendar year 2012. To the extent Cardtronics can demonstrate to class counsel that within the first 2 years of conducting such inspections, the voice-guided features are in compliance with the definition of voice guidance, the parties shall meet to discuss the results of these inspections and may agree in writing that Cardtronics shall cause to have inspected a minimum of 1,000 Cardtronics-owned non-branded ATMs each year for the remainder of the term of the agreement. These inspections will be documented in a manner showing that the person conducting the inspection used headphones to listen to the voice script on the ATM. Similarly, in the course of conducting its routine inspections of Cardtronics-owned, branded ATMs, such inspections shall be documented in a manner showing that the person conducting the inspection used headphones to listen to the voice script on the ATM. On a monthly basis, Cardtronics shall report the results of all inspections required by this paragraph to class counsel. 9. In addition to the reporting requirements identified in the final order, footnote 4, Cardtronics will report monthly between June 1, 2010 and December 31, 2011. For the period between June 1, 2010 and December 31, 2011, Cardtronics will add to the information it is currently reporting for each Cardtronics-owned ATM, whether the enhanced script has been installed on the ATM, as well as the month and year of such installation. No later than October 31, 2010, for each Cardtronics-owned ATM on which it is not technologically feasible to install an enhanced script, Cardtronics will indicate whether it will replace such ATMs with a voice-guided ATM or remove the ATM from the fleet. 10. Cardtronics will keep its ATM locator on its website up to date as to whether a covered ATM is equipped with voice guidance. 11. Notice of the proposed remediation plan will be provided to the class in the manner described below. 12. In addition to the testing costs set forth in Final Order Example 1, Cardtronics will pay $60,000 to the NFB to be used for interim testing and other compliance monitoring by the NFB, taking place in 2010 and the first quarter of 2011. The NFB shall provide Cardtronics with invoices as testing is completed to be payable by Cardtronics within 30 days of receipt of each invoice. 13. Cardtronics will pay the NFB $145,000 for the reasonable fees and costs incurred by the NFB as a result of Cardtronics' failure to comply with the final order. This amount includes attorney's fees and testing costs that the NFB incurred due to the failure of Cardtronics to comply with the final order and shall be paid in two equal installments of $72,500, one upon the effective date of this court's final approval of the proposed remediation plan and the second 60 days thereafter. 14. The requirements set forth in Final Order Example 1 shall remain in effect, in whole or in part, for 8 years from the date of this court's final approval of the proposed remediation plan. The parties may agree in writing to extend the requirements of Final Order Example 1 further, or the court may so order in connection with paragraph 13.3. Notwithstanding any expiration of Final Order Example 1, paragraphs 6, 7, and 13 of Final Order Example 1 shall continue to remain in effect in perpetuity. 15. To the extent that the requirements set forth herein are inconsistent with any provision of Final Order Example 1, this order controls. All other terms and requirements of the final order, including Final Order Example 1, will remain in full force and effect. Final Order and Judgment. United States District Court for the District of Massachusetts. Commonwealth of Massachusetts, et al., Plaintiffs versus E-Trade Access Incorporated, et al., Defendants. Civil Action Number 03-11206-MEL. Final Order and Judgment. Plaintiffs, Commonwealth of Massachusetts, National Federation of the Blind Incorporated, NFB, Adrian Ash, Jennifer Bowes, Norma Crosby, Dwight Sayer, Robert Crowley Jr., Raymond Wayne, Terry Uttermullen, and Brian Bashan, seek final approval of the class action settlement that was approved preliminarily by this court on July 26, 2007. See Memorandum and Order Granting Unopposed Motion for Preliminary Approval of Class Action Settlement and for Fairness Hearing, Preliminary Approval Order. Specifically, plaintiffs have moved the court for an order, 1, finding that the class action settlement agreement between plaintiffs and defendants, Cardtronix, LP, and Cardtronix Incorporated, collectively Cardtronix, is a fair, reasonable, and adequate settlement of all of the claims of the class against defendants, overruling the single objection to the proposed settlement and finding that each class member shall be bound by the settlement agreement, including its release. 2, finding that the notice published to the class satisfies the requirement of due process and Federal R. Civ. P. 23. 3. Approving an award of attorney's fees and costs by defendants to plaintiff, NFB, in the amount of $900,000, as agreed to by the parties. 4. Dismissing this lawsuit on the merits and with prejudice as to all claims in the lawsuit against all defendants. 5. Attaching and incorporating by reference the terms of the settlement agreement. And 6. Retaining jurisdiction of all matters relating to the interpretation, administration, implementation, effectuation, and enforcement of the settlement agreement. 1. Background. A. Plaintiff's claims. Cardtronix currently owns and or operates at least 23,300 ATMs throughout the United States, including approximately 15,000 ATMs formerly owned and or operated by defendant E-Trade Access Incorporated, Access, footnote 5. Approximately half of these ATMs are owned by independent merchants who are customers of Cardtronix, merchant-owned ATMs. This litigation concerns plaintiffs' request that Cardtronix's fleet of ATMs be made accessible to and independently usable by blind people through the use of voice guidance technology. Some of the ATMs in the Cardtronix fleet already have voice guidance. Those ATMs that are not currently voice guided vary in their capacity to be made voice guided. Many newer machines have the capacity to be upgraded to provide voice guidance through a straightforward retrofit process, upgradable ATMs. Other, older machines are not able to be upgraded and must be replaced completely in order to make voice guidance available. Plaintiff's Fourth Amended and Supplemental Class Action Complaint, Fourth Amended Complaint, alleges that Cardtronix has failed to make all of the ATMs it owns and or operates accessible to blind individuals in violation of Title III of the ADA, 42 U.S.C. Sections 12181 et sec. And Section 4.34.5 of the Department of Justice Standards for Accessible Design, 28 CFR .36, Appendix A, Standards, requiring that ATMs be accessible to and independently usable by persons with vision impairments. Title III is enforceable through a private right of action for injunctive relief, and prevailing plaintiffs are entitled to attorney's fees. See 42 U.S.C. Sections 12188 A, 1, 2, and 12205. Plaintiffs have also alleged violations of the Massachusetts Public Accommodations Act, MPAA, Mass General Laws, Chapters 272, Sections 92A and 98, and the Massachusetts Equal Rights Act, MERA, Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 93, Section 103. Although numerous procedural and substantive disputes have arisen throughout this litigation, the case turns primarily on the vigorously contested issues of whether defendants' ATMs are in violation of the standards and, if they are, whether plaintiffs are entitled to an injunction that would require Cardtronix to install voice guidance capabilities on all ATMs it owns and/or operates, including merchant-owned ATMs. The lawsuit also includes claims against defendant E-Trade Bank Incorporated concerning its banking policies applicable to consumers' use of the Cardtronix ATMs. These claims are derivative of the claims addressing the accessibility of the Cardtronix ATMs. B. Pre-filing settlement negotiations. On June 9, 2003, after lengthy negotiations, the Commonwealth and the NFB entered into a partial settlement agreement, PSA, with Defendants Access and E-Trade Bank Incorporated, collectively E-Trade, pursuant to which Access agreed to equip the ATMs it owned with voice guidance over a period of 2.5 years. The parties were not able to reach agreement with respect to merchant-owned ATMs. C. Litigation. On June 23, 2003, the Commonwealth and the NFB, along with several individual blind people and the NFB's Massachusetts affiliate, filed the present suit against E-Trade. From its inception, this litigation has been hard-fought. As fully detailed in the preliminary approval order, this complex case involved numerous dispositive motions, voluminous document discovery, and several significant discovery-related motions. 2. Summary of the settlement. After an all-day mediation on April 9, 2007, and following further negotiations over the course of more than 2 months, the parties executed the settlement agreement on June 21, 2007. In summary, the settlement requires All Cardtronics-owned ATMs will be voice-guided by the end of this year, with two exceptions. A set of approximately 1,600 machines that already have voice guidance but do not have, as otherwise required by the settlement agreement, audible verification of all of the inputs by the ATM user, and a set of no more than 177 machines will be voice-guided by mid-2008, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.1. As of April 9, 2007, and going forward, Cardtronics will only install Cardtronics-owned ATMs that are voice-guided, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.1. As of April 9, 2007, and going forward, Cardtronics will only sell or make available to merchants ATMs that are voice-guided, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.2.1. Cardtronics will identify the smallest subset of merchant-owned ATMs without voice guidance that collectively account for 80% of the transactions at merchant-owned ATMs, high-volume merchants, and will, within 90 days of approval, offer those merchants that have upgradable ATMs the opportunity to upgrade to add voice guidance at no cost, and will offer those merchants whose machines are not upgradable the opportunity to purchase a voice-guided machine at Cardtronics' wholesale cost, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.2.2. Regardless of the outcome of this marketing plan, Cardtronics will ensure that, by July 1, 2010, at least 90% of all transactions on the ATMs covered by the settlement occur on voice-guided ATMs, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.3. After July 1, 2010, Cardtronics will not add or renew any merchant-owned ATMs that are not voice-guided, so that any remaining ATMs constituting less than 10% of transaction volume that are not yet voice-guided will either become so or be eliminated, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.3.2. Any additional functions that are added to ATMs covered by the settlement will be accessible to blind patrons within 90 days, unless Cardtronics believes doing so would not be technically feasible without causing undue burden or delay, in which case the parties are to meet and confer to attempt to eliminate the obstructions to adding such new functions. Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.7. Cardtronics-owned ATMs acquired after final approval of the settlement agreement shall be voice-guided within 2 years. After acquired merchant-owned ATMs that are merchant-owned by high-volume merchants will receive the upgrade or replacement offers described above, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 3.6. Cardtronics will provide web-based information and signage to assist blind patrons in identifying which of its ATMs are voice-guided, Settlement Agreement, Paragraphs 4.1 and 4.2. Cardtronics will report to class counsel throughout the term of the settlement agreement concerning the number of voice-guided ATMs and the percentage of transactions occurring on such ATMs, and that progress will be verified by Cardtronics and monitored by the NFB, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 4.4. Cardtronics must comply with any future regulatory requirements that impose additional requirements, but if regulations require less than the settlement agreement controls, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 5.1. Class members will release claims for injunctive relief and attorney's fees under Title III of the ADA, the MPAA, the MERA, and any other claims held by the named plaintiffs to the extent such claims relate to the accessibility of ATMs to blind people. Class members also release claims for injunctive relief under state law to the extent it incorporates or is equivalent to Title III. Settlement Agreement, Paragraphs 7.1 and 7.2. Class members, excepting the named plaintiffs, do not release claims for damages, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 7.1.3. Cardtronics will pay $900,000 in attorney's fees to the NFB and make a contribution of $100,000 to the Local Consumer Aid Fund of the Massachusetts Attorney General, Settlement Agreement, Paragraphs 9.1 and 9.2. Because the settlement agreement applies to all Cardtronics ATMs, including former E-Trade ATMs, it supersedes the earlier PSA among E-Trade, the Commonwealth, and the NFB. Although E-Trade is not a party to the settlement agreement, that agreement concludes this litigation and calls for the dismissal with prejudice of all claims in this case against all defendants. Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 2.7c. The implementation of voice guidance on the ATMs makes it unnecessary for E-Trade Bank to change its policies as sought in the lawsuit. In the settlement agreement, the parties agreed that the court should retain jurisdiction of this case for purposes of the interpretation, administration, implementation, effectuation, and enforcement of this agreement, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 2.7d. In addition, defendants have withdrawn their opposition to plaintiff's motion for leave to file a fourth amended complaint, Settlement Agreement, Paragraph 2.1, and the court has granted the parties joint motion for certification of a settlement class, which includes all persons who are blind patrons of ATMs covered by the settlement agreement. 3. Preliminary approval. As mentioned, on July 26, 2007, this court granted plaintiff's unopposed motion for preliminary approval of class action settlement and scheduled a fairness hearing on the proposed settlement for December 4, 2007. In the preliminary approval order, the court approved the party's proposed plan for notifying class members of the settlement, as well as the form of the notice to be utilized for this purpose, notice. 4. Notice to the class. The court finds that the notice approved in the court's preliminary approval order was made available on Cardtronics website from approximately August 23, 2007 to November 1, 2007, and that a copy of the notice was also available on the NFB's website during that same period. The court also finds that a copy of the notice was mailed to a list of over 900 organizations, including a number composed of and or focused on the issues of blind people. Of those mailings, 36 were returned due to incorrect addresses. The correct addresses were ascertained for 11 of those returned mailings, and the notice was then sent to those correct addresses. In addition, the notice was emailed to 1,036 email addresses relating to the organizations referenced above, with a cover letter requesting that the recipient post and forward the notice. Of those emails, 186 were returned as undeliverable. 15 organizations to whom the notice was emailed notified class counsel that they had forwarded the notice to other individuals or lists of individuals thought to be class members. Another 10 organizations notified class counsel that they had posted the notice on their websites. The NFB sent the notice to over 50 email lists of blind individuals, including lists of blind lawyers, students, and travelers. In each of these paper and electronic mailings, counsel for the class offered to provide Braille versions of the notice and/or the settlement agreement. Class counsel ultimately received and honored 6 requests for Braille documentation. The court finds further that the notice was published in the August-September edition of the Braille Monitor, which is the publication of the NFB and is regularly sent to its approximately 50,000 members, among others. The notice was also published in the September 2007 edition of the Braille Forum, as well as in the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, and USA Today on August 28, 2007. In addition, the court finds that there has been only one objection to the proposed settlement. This objection purports to be on behalf of Mason P. James of Loveland, Texas, and states only that (M)(E) wish to object to the proposed settlement. See Objection by Mason P. James, September 27, 2007, paper number 270. Discussion. 1. The settlement agreement is granted final approval. A court may approve the settlement of a class action only upon finding that it is fair, reasonable, and adequate. Federal R. Civ. P. 23E1C. See also City P. Ship Company v. Atlantic Acquisition Limited, P. Ship 100 F3D 1041. 1043, First Circuit 1996, same. The First Circuit has recognized a clear policy of encouraging settlements in class action cases and has stated that (W)(HEN) sufficient discovery has been provided and the parties have bargained at arm's length, there is a presumption in favor of the settlement. City P. Ship 100 F3D at 1043. In determining the fairness, reasonableness, and adequacy of a proposed class action settlement, several courts in this district have looked to the following factors set forth in City of Detroit v. Grinnell Corporation, 495 F2D 448, 463, 2nd Circuit, 1974, overruled on other grounds by Missouri v. Jenkins, 491 U.S. 274, 1989. 1. The complexity, expense, and likely duration of the litigation. 2. The reaction of the class to the settlement. 3. The stage of the proceedings and the amount of discovery completed. 4. The risks of establishing liability. 5. The risks of establishing damages. 6. The risks of maintaining the class action through the trial. 7. The ability of the defendants to withstand a greater judgment. 8. The range of reasonableness of the settlement fund in light of the best possible recovery. 9. The range of reasonableness of the settlement fund to a possible recovery in light of all the attendant risks of litigation. For all of the reasons set forth in the court's preliminary approval order, an analysis of these factors strongly supports this court's final approval of the settlement agreement as fair, reasonable, and adequate. In addition, this court overrules the single objection to the proposed settlement, as no reasons were provided for that objection as required by the notice approved by the court. Therefore, this court also finds that all class members are bound by the settlement agreement, including its release provisions. 2. Notice to class. Rule 23E states that notice of the proposed dismissal or compromise shall be given to all members of the class in such manner as the court directs. The notice must satisfy Rule 23 as well as due process requirements, cf. Basinga v. United States, 923 F. 2D 133, 136-37, 9th Circuit, 1991. Requirements of due process and Fed R. Civ. P. 23C2B are similar. It is the court's duty to ensure that the notice ordered is reasonably calculated to reach the absent class members. Reppert v. Marvin Lumber and Cedar Company, 359 F. 3D 5356, 1st Circuit, 2004, citations omitted. When individual notice is infeasible, notice by publication in a newspaper of national circulation is an acceptable substitute. Murfasahi v. Fleet Mortgage Corporation, 356 F. 3D 781-786, 7th Circuit, 2004. This court finds that the notice program approved in its preliminary approval order and now implemented by the parties was the best notice practicable under the circumstances and satisfied the requirements of due process and Fed R. Civ. P. 23. The parties represented that there was no readily accessible list of the potential class members in this case and that such a list likely could not be created without enormous effort and expenditure. Notice here involved a combination of individual mailing, through the Braille Monitor and Braille Forum, to tens of thousands of blind people, and publication in three newspapers of national circulation, the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and USA Today. Under these circumstances, individual notice was not required in order to satisfy the requirements of due process and Fed R. Civ. P. 23. 3. Attorney's fees and costs. Class counsel have submitted an unopposed petition for an award of attorney's fees and costs pursuant to Fed R. Civ. P. 23H and 54D2. Specifically, class counsel request that the court approve an award of attorney's fees and costs by defendants to the NFB in the amount of $900,000, the amount agreed to by the parties as part of the class action settlement. The ADA provides that courts may award the prevailing party its reasonable attorney's fee, including litigation, expenses, and costs. 42 U.S.C. Section 12205. Rules 23H1 and 2 require that notice and an opportunity to object be provided. In this case, the notice sent pursuant to the preliminary approval order included the amount of the fees and provided an opportunity to object, and no class member has objected to the proposed fee award. In evaluating a fee petition in a case such as this, the court is to consider the reasonableness of the hours spent and the hourly rate sought. Weinberger v. Great Northern Nakusa Corporation, 925 F2D 518 529, 1st Circuit, 1991, quoting in R.E. Spillance, 884 F2D 642 647, 1st Circuit, 1989. After due consideration of the filings of class counsel and the relevant case law cited therein, this court finds that a fee award in the amount of $900,000 is well within the bounds of reasonableness under the circumstances of this case. The time spent by class counsel in litigating this complex case clearly was justified. In addition, the lodestar amount, calculated by multiplying these hours by reasonable prevailing rates, is almost twice the amount agreed upon in the settlement. The court finds that the hourly rates charged by class counsel are commensurate with the rates charged by Boston attorneys of comparable experience in comparable matters, and that the rates actually billed to the NFB were below those rates. In addition, the award sought is well below the actual amount of fees and costs paid by the NFB in connection with this litigation. For these reasons, the court approves the fee award agreed to by the parties as part of the settlement agreement. It is hereby ordered, adjudged, and decreed that, 1. This court has jurisdiction over the subject matter of this lawsuit and over all of the parties to the lawsuit, including the named plaintiffs, all members of the class, and defendants. 2. The court adopts and incorporates the findings of the preliminary approval order and hereby approves the settlement agreement as fair, reasonable, and adequate in all respects. This is especially so in view of the complexity, expense, and probable duration of further litigation, the risks of establishing liability, the intensive arm's-length negotiations of experienced counsel, and the reasonableness of the relief obtained, considering the range of possible outcomes and the attendant risks of litigation. 3. The court overrules the single objection to the settlement and finds that each class member is bound by the settlement agreement, including its release. 4. The court finds that the notice published to the class satisfies the requirements of due process and Fed R. Civ. P. 23. 5. The court finds that the attorney's fees and costs sought by class counsel are reasonable and approves an award of fees and costs in the amount of $900,000 as agreed to by the parties. 6. The court dismisses this lawsuit on the merits and with prejudice as to all claims in the lawsuit against all defendants. 7. The court attaches hereto as Exhibit 1 and incorporates into this final order and judgment the terms of the settlement agreement. 8. The court retains jurisdiction of all matters relating to the interpretation, administration, implementation, effectuation, and enforcement of the settlement agreement. It is so ordered. Dated, illegible handwritten date, USDJ 397837.